Hi, I'm Chef Andrew Carmelini of La Conda Verde, The Dutch, and Lafayette. And you're listening to Food Fridays with Leonard Lope on WNYC and NYC.org.
Margaret Roach is one person who can tell you exactly how her garden is growing. She was the first garden editor for Martha Stewart Living magazine and then the editorial director of Martha Stewart's Living Omnimedia. And now she's a full-time gardener and a consultant on the side. She left Manhattan for an old house in upstate New York, which she chronicled in her first book, And I Shall Have Some Peace There. And she has followed that with a new one called The Backyard Parables, Lessons on Gardening and Life from Grand Central Publishing. I'm very pleased that she could join me today for one of our Food Friday segments. Hello.
It's my pleasure.
You've said in both books that your garden saved you. In what ways?
Hallelujah. Saved by the garden. Indeed. Well, you know, I think it did, Leonard. I think that gardening is nothing really more than or less than a patience building practice, and it's a practice where we learn to live better. It teaches us ethics. It teaches us the whole life cycle about loss, about starting over. So in so many ways, with those types of lessons, hard times have been easier for me.
You know, ethics?
I believe it does. I believe it teaches you if you harm others, and you can do a lot of harm in the garden. Just go to the chemical aisle of the garden center and then come home and dump some stuff. But you can harm a lot of things by trying to be to have dominion over the yard. A garden is contrivance. It's not nature. But we don't want to be masters of the universe and subdue everything out there. So I think there are ethics involved.
Well, there are all those commercials for certain product that guarantees that you will have the best lawn in the world. I
don't
guess
believe the butterflies and flowers on the bags, folks.
You quote Bertrand Russell, who wrote, "I've made an odd discovery. Every time I talk to a savant, I feel quite sure that happiness is no longer a possibility. Yet when I talk with my gardener, I'm convinced of the opposite."
Indeed. I think that's really true. I think the garden gives us so many opportunities to enjoy simple pleasures, to stop and just witness miraculous things, really. I mean, I don't mean to sound too kooky and woo-woo, although I am kooky and woo-woo, but I believe it does.
Well, you could do all sorts of things to make it more fun. For example, there are certain plants that you can grow that will attract bees and attract butterflies.
Well, and that's exactly it, is to see the entire food chain, not just us and the pretty view out the window. I don't think gardening is outdoor decorating. I think that it's has the potential for engagement, true engagement with every creature, yes.
Well, although the decorating is not a bad
thing. Not a bad thing, and I love the view out my window.
Why do you call this book The Backyard Parables? gardens not just teach us things outright? Is this parables only?
I do think there's more than one level. For me, I have this crazy website, awaytogarden.com, and the motto is horticultural how-to and woo-woo. That's what I teach on there. And that's always been kind of my brand. And so when I was thinking about the book, that didn't make a very good title, did it? Horticultural How-To and Woo-Woo. But I knew that the garden for me had these two layers. There was the obvious, you know, I'd eat the ripe tomato. That was one harvest. But then there was the harvest I was talking about before of the life lessons. And so I felt like that was what I wanted to express in the title.
And also, obviously, you want to get across the idea that you prefer natural gardening.
I do. I do very, very strenuously, as I have for 30-something years, yes.
You've written that you began with lust, which started with plastic nursery labels.
It started with plastic nursery labels because I said that I think that the lust rose up on me in my early days as a gardener going to the garden center. They had the little tiny plastic labels, and the only thing you knew about the plant was a postage-sized inch-by-inch color picture on what used to be called pixie sticks. That's what the label size was called. Now labels are as big as your head. And it was just those little pictures that drew me to the first plants because I didn't know anything. And I killed most of the plants, by the way, and that's okay.
In fact, gardening can involve a lot of humility. You're down on your knees a lot. And also, plants sometimes fail to bloom or they die. You have no idea why.
Well, I say two things about that. I say, first of all, 30 years into gardening, I know only one thing for certain, and that's that things will die. And that, you know, look, we're all, the Japanese understand this. Their gardens celebrate ephemera. They don't celebrate the full bloom of the cherry tree. They like petal drop.
And farmers will tell you that you can plant 100 seeds, but you're going to get 75 or whatever it is, 50 plants.
We are not in control.
Well, do you have any sense of why some succeed and some don't?
Well, I do know why some things succeed, because sometimes it has to do with weather. Sometimes it has to do with the vigor of, if you're talking about seeds, it can have to do with maybe you saved the seed 1 year too long, or maybe you didn't keep it moist enough when it was germinating. So there can be sort of mechanical failures or meteorological failures.
And then there are those commercial seeds. You have no idea how long they've been in that package?
Well, you don't. I mean, they have to give you, it's required by law that they're labeled as to their viability at the time that they were packaged. So it'll say 78% or 92% germination rate is guaranteed. So there are rules about that, yes.
You say that people should never stop wanting more plants.
That's how I ended up like I did, with acres full of them. Now I have to take care of them.
Well, you have acres, but sometimes when you have a small backyard...
Doesn't matter. I think you'll still have, as we were just saying before, that lust. You know, once you get attached to one plant, there's always some new beautiful face that you admire and want to acquire.
Margaret Roach is my guest. Her book, The Backyard Parables, Lessons on Gardening and Life. And you follow 1 year's time and start in winter.
I did start in winter. For me... you know, the garden and the earth knows, nature knows lessons that we sometimes forget in our multitasking world. You not only go, go, go and grow, 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 but you have to rest. You have to have a downtime in each cycle. Each full cycle has to include dormancy. And so I wanted to start with the thing that makes sort of the born again, the life again possible, is the rest of winter.
Although this last winter was so strange, there would be a lot of cold
days. Is it over
yet? And then suddenly there would be a couple of warm days, mm-hmm. and I felt that a few of the plants, the perennials, were already saying, well, is it time for me to start peeking out?
Yes, I have. I do. For 17 years, I've been having public garden days. I have them three times a year in my garden, and for part of the Garden Conservancy Open Days program. And I'm having one on May 11th. Whose crazy idea was that? And it feels like it's April 11th, you know, right now. So I'm not really sure what it's going to be like.
Well, was this garden, this winter, good for your plants?
I think in a way it was. It was much better than the previous one that was much too warm and had no snow cover and very little precipitation. I'll always take more snow.
Are you one of those people who gets lots of different seed catalogs in the mail?
Well, because I'm a garden writer for so many years, everybody sends me their seed catalogs. So yes, I do, and I look at a lot online as well that don't even do print catalogs.
You wrote a column that upset some people in the Times Sunday Review section.
I'm an agitator.
In March, about how the practice of growing vegetables for their seed involves more chemical use than growing the same crops for food.
Yes.
How does that work?
Well, it makes, if you think about it, when does a plant produce seed? It doesn't produce seed. Like if you want to eat the lettuce, there's no flower and seed. That comes much, much months or even a year later in many vegetable crops.
So after it bolts.
Exactly. So that may be, many vegetable crops are biennials. It comes in the second year. You have to keep the plant in the ground a lot longer, which means you have to keep it healthy and vigorous a lot longer. So more fertilizer, maybe more pesticides. Plus, there are some insect pests and pathogens that only appear when the flower or even the seed is being produced. They are specific to the flowers and seeds. So as a seed farmer, you're up against a lot more duration and many, many other invaders.
Well, how can you tell whether the seed that you're buying from that catalog is going to be good or bad and produce the way you think it should be?
I think you want to think about how you plan to grow it, what you are, and this gets back to sort of ethics, I suppose, but how you're going to grow it, what kind of a home you're going to give it, and then try to match the seed farmer that you're buying. Pick a seed farmer who has similar conditions. So I'm in the Northeast. You know, I have a short growing season. There are some small, and I grow organically. I grow without all those chemicals. So I don't want seed that's been coddled and grown in a warm zone, you know, and on lots of chemicals. So I want to make a match between me and the seed farmer, if that makes any sense.
Now, you'd never studied horticulture, did you?
A little bit here and there. You know, I was a reporter for many years, and so I'm one of those people who studies by writing about things. So I did take courses at the New York Botanical Garden for a number of years, but not as a degree, no.
There are some purists who only want to plant heirloom plants.
Yes.
You?
No.
You like hybrids?
I like hybrids and heirlooms, and there are some reasons. I don't have anything against hybrids. Sometimes there are certain traits that have been bred into some hybrids. Like I have a favorite tomato for making tomato sauce. It's called Juliet. It happens to be a hybrid small paste tomato. It's fantastic. If you met Juliet, you would never be without her again. So, you know, I don't have anything against hybrids.
Well, you in the end, you want to grow things that are going to taste good.
Taste good, do well for me.
But you can't know that unless you grew them last year.
Or unless you shop at the farmer's market and ask the farmers, what's that, which I do a lot, and that's how I find varieties that I then grow in my own garden, or ask other gardeners, obviously.
You say you like fences?
Because I hate deer, you mean?
But also, you can grow some plants using fences.
Yes, a lot of things. You can get a lot more space out of even one raised bed if you have on the shady side of it, you know, not where it'll cast. If you put a fence for peas or beans or cucumbers or whatever, trellising, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, fences can keep deer out, but they don't keep the squirrels and some of the other rodents out.
No, and I have
birds.
Lots of those. Woodchucks
are my
nemesis.
So what do? Do you stick a lot of netting over the things that you want to save?
You know, the old adage is that you plant enough for yourself and for the critters. A lot of times I run around screaming like a mad woman, hoping to chase them away. And sometimes, you know, I do put up barriers, but physical barriers. I have an 8-foot fence for deer, for instance.
Do you try to match the flowers with the vegetables?
It's very, you mean like companion planting?
Yes.
What's a wonderful sort of aha that I had by talking over the years, and especially this last year or two, to many seed farmers, organic seed farmers, is they actually use things. Once we're done with our arugula, for instance, or our lettuce, as we were talking about, or our parsley, we usually pull it before it bolts. Instead of pulling it, let it flower. Those are some of the most beneficial flowers, bringing in the most beneficial insects to your vegetable garden. So you don't even need a fancy flower. Like cut flower, let some of your crops stay in the ground, a little portion, and bolt in place.
Now, I mentioned squirrels, which are the bane of my existence.
And mine too. I'm not crazy
backyard.
About them.
Do any of the things that are supposed to chase them away work? The
save
dried
money,
blood and all of those things?
Well, dried blood is a deterrent to herbivorous animals because obviously it's not a herbivorous product. It's meat. It's blood. The problem is it can attract raccoons, for instance, are omnivorous, right? So they would happily come and dig where – do you know what I mean? And for me in the country, I'd have a bear coming in or someone else coming in, so I'm not interested, or a fox or whatever.
Some people – when I was asking about pairing things, some people pair marigolds with tomato plants.
Yes, and marigolds have some repellent properties that are really nice that keep some problems away and so forth. They have a strong scent in their foliage and flowers. But there's lots and lots and lots of practices of companion planting. But as I said, I think one thing to do is let lots of things go to flower, let things go through to maturity, keep a little bit of those crops.
You try to mix annuals and perennials?
I do. I don't do as much with annuals except in containers as I used to. The garden is kind of big, and what I find is that perennials are, you know, a little more duration. They have more duration, and it's not as much work, you know, like with the annuals, putting them in and out every year. And the expense also, of course, you know, replacing a lot of annuals. Annuals have gotten very, very expensive. You know, they're growing them in bigger pots now and so forth, selling them for, you know, $9 for one petunia or $6 for one petunia.
Well, when you grow in the city, if you want to grow vegetables, you have to put them in pots or in raised beds.
Yes.
But usually you put the flowers directly into the ground.
You could. And I grow all my vegetables in raised beds, and I do a lot of containers also, you know, groupings of containers, and some vegetables in containers too.
You give some great tips for ripening tomatoes, both in the garden and indoors. Could you share them?
Well, you know, there's people who believe in ripening in the dark versus leaving them out on the windowsill in the light, whether you should wrap them, for instance, in newspapers. The most important
thing
to do.
Put them in the refrigerator?
No, never, ever, ever let them chill. But the most important thing to do is to sort them by degrees of ripeness, the ones that are a firm green versus have a little blush of orange on them. So and give the similar ones, the similar condition ones, the same treatment, whatever that is, so that you don't have one bad apple, you know, spoil the rest of the bunch, so to speak.
Are you one of those people who has favorites?
Oh, every day a different favorite. I do have favorites, I suppose. I'm crazy about plants that the birds are crazy about. I have 62 kinds of birds who come to the garden every year because of the things that I planted. And it's wonderful, and because of two water gardens that I have on the property.
The only bad thing about birds is trying to keep a table out there in the middle of the garden as well.
A table? That they
the birds, you wind up cleaning that table every day.
Yes, yes, yes. That's probably true. But they're delightful companions.
We have a link to Margaret Roach's website on our show page at WNYC.org. Her book, The Backyard Parables, Lessons on Gardening and Life, published by Grand Central. Thank you so much for being with
us.
Thank
you for inviting me.